And you're tuned to listener-sponsored, commercial-free community radio, WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM, 7:57. Coming up at 8 p.m., Off the Hook with Emmanuel Goldstein. Stay tuned.
Saturday, May 23rd, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., organizers of African Liberation Day 98 urge you to join us for the commemoration of the 35th anniversary of ALD and to be part of an historic gathering of community activists, scholars, several United Nations diplomats, and to hear a special statement from President Laurent Kabila of the People's Republic of the Congo on the issue of genocide and human rights. At PS 92, Mary McLeod Bethune School, located on 134th Street between Adam Clayton Powell and Frederick Douglass Boulevards. Invite your family and friends to this historic event. For more information, please call the Patrice Lumumba Coalition at 212-663-3805 or 212-330-8277. Again, that's 212-663-3805 or 212-330-8277.
The Crystal Quilt invites you to a workshop exploring the passage to womanhood for women in their 20s to create a sense of direction and peace in your life, for older women to gain clarity in your life by looking back and to support young women. Women of all ages welcome. The workshop takes place on May 30th from 2:30 to 5:30 p.m. at Empire State College, 225 Varick Street, near 7th Avenue South and Houston. For more information, call 212-780-4770. That's 212-780-4770. This is a public service announcement by WBAI on behalf of the Crystal Quilt. You are so special, girl.
Yeah. Hey, yo, this is Javar Claiborne, a.k.a. Jock. When I'm not listening to Puff Daddy and Family or the Wu-Tang Clan, I'm getting the latest info on 99.5 WBAI. Yeah. Peace.
And this is radio station WBAI in New York, where the time is 8 o'clock. It's a Tuesday night, and that means usually it's time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. It couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood, but Billy Bomb.
Good evening to everybody. This is another edition of Off the Hook. We haven't been around for a few weeks because of the fundraiser, but we're back now and hopefully better. Yes, all kinds of fun things to update people on, adventures that have been happening, and good news, bad news, all kinds of news. And of course, your phone calls will be coming up in, I guess, on the half-hour mark. First, of course, I'm sure everybody has heard by now of the FCC ruling that requires all radio stations to play commercials. And, well, we at BAI, of course, are never one to flout the law. We always believe in being completely 100% in tune with the times. So as far as that goes, we eagerly jump into this. Now, we're not going to have, you know, the kinds of commercials that you might be used to, but we're going to comply with the law and have these things that we call anti-mercials. Yeah, that's right. That's where the opposing sponsor pays for you to say something about the other sponsor. It's kind of complicated, but I think maybe the first anti-mercial that we have might make it all clear in keeping with the new guidelines.
The condolences of every person at Pepsi Cola are with you.
I got fired by my boss, Pepsi.
We have to look great for Pepsi Cola.
I nailed Jesus to the cross, Pepsi.
Well, you gotta pay the price.
Powdered mashed potatoes in the cupboard for 3 years.
You know, I think we could live with this. But yeah, that's just one of many anti-mercials coming your way here on WBAI and Off the Hook. Wouldn't that be fun? Oh, yes. Well, it's been, what, a month now since we've been around, and a lot has happened. Including some news today that can only be considered typical. There was a hearing out in California to appeal the ruling of Kevin Mitnick's judge that basically not only denied him bail, but denied him a bail hearing where they could deny him bail. So today, the Ninth Circuit Court decided to uphold that in a one-word statement. Denied. It's wonderful to live in a democracy, isn't it? So basically, Kevin Mitnick still is in prison. And unlike the World Trade Center bombers and just about everybody else that I can think of, he will not even have the chance to have a bail hearing. Over 3 years and counting. And it just gets more and more crazy. You wonder how much people are going to take. Just got some new bumper stickers, actually, in the mail. First of all, the new issue of 2600 is out. And for those of you who are subscribers, you'll be getting that issue along with a free Kevin bumper sticker, which is black lettering on yellow. You know what's interesting? They're popping up everywhere. I just took a trip out to Ohio to the Dayton Hamfest. And I'll be darned if not every rest stop along the way had at least one free Kevin sticker on it somewhere. I mean, that's pretty cool when you think of it. But there are other bumper stickers, too. A lot of people are getting involved here. There's bumper stickers, there's T-shirts. We just got some in the mail today that are also free Kevin bumper stickers. These ones are white lettering on black. Totally different way of looking at it, but it basically says the same thing. And these are starting to pop up everywhere, too. If you want to get those bumper stickers, let me give you a web address that you can check out. www.mindspring.com/squigglything0, J-U-M-P-0. Once again, www.mindspring.com/squigglejump0. And we know it's not called a squiggle, but we all know what a squiggle is, so we're just going to leave it at that. Now, if you're interested in the other ones, we have a deal with those, which we'll be getting into more detail on as we have, I guess, an updated site. And those are the Free Kevin bumper stickers on yellow background, which are in conjunction with the Kevin Mitnick Defense Fund. In other words, people buy these things for a small price, which we won't say over the air, but will be on our website. And the money goes to Kevin Mitnick's Defense Fund. So full details are in the next issue of 2600 and also will be on the 2600 website, www.2600.com, as well as the official Kevin Mitnick site of www.kevinmitnick.com. And look for that in the next day or so. Yeah, so things are happening. People are really getting into this whole thing. At the Dayton Ham Fest, we also had a bunch of Mitnick stickers. And it's interesting because Kevin Mitnick, I don't know if I should say was a ham or is a ham. I don't know if you continue to be a ham if you're in prison. I guess it's like being a hacker. You just never stop. And so he must still be a ham. And the reaction of some of the people out there was just kind of weird. You know, I mean, the ham radio community is a fascinating community and one which I haven't spent nearly enough time in because there's just so many nuances to it. Some people there were very supportive of Kevin, but occasionally you run into like one of these, you know, crusty old guys with a baseball cap that said, well, I'll tell you what, son, you're going to have to fight that battle alone. I guess he was mad about something Kevin must have done back when he was 17 or something, like maybe stepped on his transmission a little bit. I don't know. I don't know what kind of pranks, you know, ham radio operators pull on each other, but they do have long memories, and that's something to keep in mind if you do annoy somebody in the ham radio community. Hackers have long memories too, but oftentimes we change our minds quite a bit. Now, some fascinating things were going on while we were off the air in the hacker community, and they go all the way up to today. But let's start with something that happened a couple of weeks ago. Actually, last week I would say this happened. It was a news story. A news story that somebody sent me back in the middle of the month having to do with computer hackers in this well-respected magazine known as The New Republic. And this article was entitled Washington Scene, Hack Heaven. I'm going to read you a little bit of this. And you tell me what you think. Ian Restill, a 15-year-old computer hacker who looks like an even more adolescent version of Bill Gates, is throwing a tantrum. I want more money. I want a Miata. I want a trip to Disney World. I want X-Men comic book number one. I want a lifetime subscription to Playboy and throw in Penthouse. Show me the money. Show me the money. Yeah. Over and over again, the boy who is wearing a frayed Cal Ripken Jr. t-shirt is shouting his demands. Across the table, executives from a California software firm called Juked Micronics are listening and trying ever so delicately to oblige. Excuse me, sir, one of the suits says, tentatively, to the pimply teenager. Excuse me, pardon me for interrupting you, sir. We can arrange more money for you. Then you can buy the comic book, and then, when you're of more, say, appropriate age, you can buy the car and pornographic magazines on your own. It's pretty amazing that a 15-year-old could get a big-time software firm to grovel like that. What's more amazing, though, is how Ian got Juke's attention by breaking into its databases. In March, Restill, whose nom de plume is Big Bad Bionic Boy, used a computer at his high school library to hack into Juke. Once he got past the company's online security system, he posted every employee's salary on the company's website, alongside more than a dozen pictures of naked women, each with the caption, "The Big Bad Bionic Boy Has Been Here, Baby." After weeks of trying futilely to figure out how Ian cracked the security program, Juke's engineers gave up. That's when the company came to Ian's Bethesda, Maryland home to hire him. And Ian, clever boy that he is, had been expecting them. The principal told us to hire a defense lawyer fast because Ian was in deep trouble, says his mother, Jamie Restell. Ian laughed and told us to get an agent. Our boy was definitely right. Ian says he knew that Juked would determine it was cheaper to hire him and pay him to fix their database than it would be to have engineers do it. And he knew this because the same thing had happened to more than a dozen online friends. Indeed, deals like Ian's are becoming common, so common, in fact, that hacker agents now advertise their commissions on websites. You didn't know this, did you? Hacker agents are advertising their commissions on websites. Computer Insider, a newsletter for hackers, a newsletter for hackers that none of us hackers have ever heard of before. Computer Insider estimates that about 900 recreational hackers were hired in the last 4 years by companies they once targeted. Ian's agent, whose business card is emblazoned with the slogan Super Agent to Super Nerds, claims to represent nearly 300 of them, ages 9 to 68. A failed basketball agent, Joe Hyatt, got into the industry when one of his son's friends, 21-year-old Ty Harris, broke into an internet security firm 3 years ago and came to him for advice. The software maker paid Harris $1 million, a monster truck, and promised free agency, meaning he can quit and work for a competitor at any time. Of course, a cynic might say hacker schemes look an awful lot like protection rackets. That's an awfully nice computer network you got there. It would be a shame if somebody broke into it. Law enforcement officials in particular complain that deals between companies and their online predators have made prosecution of online security breaches impossible. We are basically paralyzed right now, explains Jim Gort, who directs the Center for Interstate Online Investigations, a joint police project of 18 states. We can't arrest or prosecute most hackers because corporate victims are refusing to come forward. This is a huge problem. In March, Nevada law enforcement officials got so desperate, they ran the following radio advertisement. Would you hire a shoplifter to watch the cash register? Please don't deal with hackers. The state took to the airwaves shortly after a hacker broke into a regional department store's computer system and instructed it to credit his Visa card about $500 per day. According to Nevada officials, the boy racked up more than $32,000 in credit before he was caught. But the store wouldn't press charges. It let him keep the money. Then threw in a $1,500 shopping spree, all in exchange for showing them how to improve their security. Little wonder, then, that 21 states are now considering versions of something called the Uniform Computer Security Act, which would effectively criminalize immunity deals between hackers and companies while imposing stiff penalties on the corporations who make such deals. This is just like prostitution, says Julie Farthwork of the Anti-Hacker Computer Security Center, which helped draft the legislation. As a society, we don't want people making a career out of something that's simply immoral. Not surprisingly, hackers hate the proposed legislation. They see themselves as freelance security investigators, and they even have their own group, the National Assembly of Hackers. And they lobby against the new law, the National Assembly of Hackers. You know, these people never contact me. I don't know why I don't know any of this. Really, hackers have to put in a lot of sunk costs before they find the one that's broken and get paid, says Frank Juliet, the group's president. So it's definitely a large community service that we are doing. Less predictable, however, is the opposition of companies that have been hacked. It seems they don't like the proposed law either because they're worried they'll be stuck with no legal way to patch holes in their security systems. The Association of Internet-Based Businesses has actually formed a task force with the National Assembly of Hackers to lobby against the law. It remains to be seen who will win. But until new laws are passed, hackers like Ian Restell will continue to enjoy a certain exalted status, particularly among their peers. At a conference sponsored by the National Assembly of Hackers last week, teenage hackers and graying corporate executives flocked to Ian, patting him on the back and giving him high fives. "We're so proud of him," said Ian's mother. "He's doing such good things, and he's so smart and kind." At the formal dinner that followed, the MC explained that Ian had just signed a contract for $81,000 in scholarship money and a collection of rare comic books. The audience applauded wildly. Then Ian stood on his chair and took a bow. He announced that he had hacked into a new company and frozen their bank account temporarily. "And now they're going to show me the money," he said, swirling his hips and shaking his fists. "I want a Miata. I want a trip to Disney World. Dot, dot, dot." Well, you know, I got this story in the mail a few weeks ago, and I guess you could imagine what my reaction is. First of all, why didn't I ever hear of any of these people? You know, I never heard of any of the hackers involved, never heard of any of the organizations. And the story itself just seemed, well, ridiculous, absurd, preposterous, bad fiction. And you know what? That's exactly what it was. Because probably a lot of people have heard what happened after the story. More people have heard that than have heard the story itself. I tried to get a copy of the New Republic last week. I was unable to. Sold out everywhere. If anyone has that copy, please let me know. But what happened afterwards is even more amazing. Listen to this. This is from the Washington Post. The New Republic has fired an associate editor, Stephen Glass, for fabricating characters and situations in several of his articles. Editor Charles Lane said that he dismissed Glass last Friday, hours after confirming that he had invented both a teenage computer hacker and the company whose security he supposedly penetrated. Lane called the entire article a hoax. Steve has admitted to making up certain parts of it, Lane said, and I myself, based on an investigation of the facts, have determined to a moral certainty that the entire article is made up. I mean, come on. The New Republic. How about some fact-checking here? You know, before you completely throw a cloud over an entire group of people, maybe, just maybe, look into whether or not any of it is true, whether or not the person writing this has some sort of an agenda. It's funny, but it's also very sad and very dangerous to be doing this kind of thing, because it leads to all kinds of conceptions about people that simply are not true. This is not the first time this has happened. I see these kinds of articles all the time. And I think if you check with anybody in the hacker community, you know, people who really exist, they might be able to cast some light on it as to whether or not it's really true. And just to show you what I'm talking about, there's another article in another magazine that has not yet been exposed as a fake, but which I say now is a fake because of the preposterous allegations that they make, some of which affect people right here. This comes from Signal Magazine. Now, Signal Magazine is some sort of military magazine put out by the government. Yeah, that's right, Signal Magazine. Not quite sure how to get a copy of this one. The only one we've been able to find is on the net. And unfortunately, that's as far as we were able to get. But this article allegedly was written, or according to it, was written by its editor-in-chief, Clarence A. Robinson, Jr. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, only because it's rather long. But let's see how much of it we can get through. A radical digital life form functioning as a virtual machine quietly protects information networks by watching for the earliest signs of an attack. When an outsider attempts network penetration, this information warfare battle management server shifts instantly from passive background monitoring to heightened readiness. If required, the digital mechanism provides an aggressive offensive capability. Again, we're starting off a bad Stephen King book or something here. And who knows where that's going to wind up going. Yeah, radical digital life form. Bushwhackers, whenever you see words like bushwhackers or information warfare or things like that, you know, the alarms have to start going off. It's some sort of an instinct that you need to develop in this world. Bushwhackers along the information highway are quickly learning that their attacks can provoke a devastating response. This new digital life form, a non-linear algorithm hosted on a server, functions like a biological organism with an attitude, a very hostile attitude. While recently undergoing prototype testing, the Blitzkrieg server, as it is called, detected a high probability of attack on U.S. internet sites from hackers in another country. The server immediately took action to preempt and prepare for an anticipated assault before retaliating. The Blitzkrieg server generates retaliatory options based on integral information warfare rules of engagement from the company that perfected the technology, whatever that means. The server's nonlinear computing algorithm will self... They should write for Star Trek, these people. The server's nonlinear computing algorithm will self-organize and self-heal, recognize an infiltration, isolate it, adapt to it, and create a totally different networking route to overcome an invasion. An inherent capability creates strong network survivability while also holding numerous offensive options in reserve. These options could eventually end in the destruction of an attacker's network resources. We've read three paragraphs of this story, and so far it hasn't said a damn thing as far as what they're talking about at all. It's really pretty sad. Let me skip ahead to something that I think is of interest, of specific interest to a bunch of us. The server's unique technology enabled it to indicate that there was inside help for an attack on a San Francisco company. The FBI determined that a disgruntled employee attending the 2600 Hackers Convention in Las Vegas, Nevada, sought assistance from hackers in Japan to attack the company. Now, if this is true, it shows how good the feds are, because we don't have any hackers' conventions in Las Vegas. They're probably thinking of DEF CON, which has got nothing to do with 2600, and not a whole lot to do with hacking either, some may say. But certainly does not have much to do with threatening companies and doing nasty things like that. So that's something of concern to a lot of people right there. Now, the one statement, though, that really is troubling and annoying: the Blitzkrieg server determined a high probability that a hacker attack would be targeted at specific U.S. corporations and California state government installations. The server predicted that the network attack would be from Japanese nationals with the help of U.S. collaborators affiliated with the 2600 International Hacker Group. Now, what in the world does that mean? What in the world are these people saying? People affiliated with the 20... First of all, it's not an international hacker group. It's a magazine, you know? It's a magazine that spreads information around. And who are these people that are supposedly affiliated with us in some sort of international capacity that are getting these Japanese cyber people involved in something? I want specifics, you know? This is something that I personally am involved in, so I think I should know if some of my cohorts are planning to take down, you know, a big mega corporation. Like, God forbid, Pepsi or something. That'd be horrible. But let's back this up with some facts. It wouldn't hurt to do that. So Signal Magazine, whoever you are, whoever these people are, let's get to the heart of the matter and find out just what it is you're talking about and try not to confuse people with nonsense. All right. Now we have stuff today that took place on the grounds of Capitol Hill. I don't know if this is on C-SPAN or if it's just... showing up in various news forums. I heard it on CBS Radio this afternoon. And apparently there's some sort of a computer security hearing going on. And this isn't the first time this has happened. It happens all the time, actually. But the headlines coming out of this one: hackers can shut down the entire internet in 30 minutes. Now, this is amazing. This is really incredible, because the people that are down there testifying happen to be members of the Loft, which is a hacker group in Boston. Now, I know these people, and without even talking to them, because they're in Washington, D.C., and they're not reachable right now, I know they would never say something as inflammatory as hackers can take down the internet in 30 minutes. I mean, that's just crazy. But that is how it is being reported. Now, hopefully in a week or so, we'll know exactly what it was they did say and how it's being totally stretched out of proportion. But I see a disturbing trend here with these newspaper articles, with the way the papers are reporting things, and certainly with the things happening with Kevin Mitnick. Basically, you attach hacker to anything, and now you attach 2600 to anything, it means something bad. It means something evil, a threat of some sort, something that must be stopped, regardless of whether or not the facts get in the way. So, what I guess the best thing to do is just keep your eyes and ears open. You know, when you hear these stories, start asking some questions. And that's what a lot of people in Dayton did when we were explaining to them. There for 3 days. 3 days, I think 8 hours per day, outside in this huge parking lot. And we were talking to many people about the Kevin Mitnick case. And apart from the people that already knew about him, and I'd still say even the people that knew about him, the vast majority were in favor of his immediately getting out of prison. But those people who did not know about him were pretty shocked to hear the facts and to understand just what it was that was going on. And it's something that the vast majority of people still are unaware of. That's what we have to do, is help get the word out by getting the word out, I guess, with stickers, with T-shirts, with whatever it is you need to do to get people to say, who's Kevin and why is he in prison? And encourage people to visit websites and learn from that, and just get the word out. Get the word out in your schools. Get the word out in your workplaces. Although, you should know that doing this carries a risk. That's right. Getting the word out on anything can be a very risky thing. Here's an example of how that is possible. These are some people that tried to start a 2600 meeting. And, you know, when you read all this stuff about how 2600 is targeting the world and about to destroy everything for everybody, I guess you could understand the reaction these people got. But if maybe you pay attention to the facts and talk to some of the actual people that really exist, you could see how unfair this might be. All right, here's a letter that we got just a couple of days ago. 2 weeks ago, some of my friends and I decided we were going to start a 2600 meeting in our town. There's a meeting in Omaha, but we have no way of getting there. Many people in our own town seem to be interested, that town being Kearney, Nebraska. So we printed out flyers that said nothing more than the following. 2600 meeting. Where? Hilltop Mall, Kearney, Nebraska, center by Munchville. When? Last Friday of every month, 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Who? Everybody that has an interest in technology. On Monday morning, two friends and I went to the front of the school and posted one of these flyers on a big bulletin board. A big bulletin board. Can you imagine the nerve of somebody doing that, walking up to a bulletin board and putting a flyer on it? Boy, what kind of TV programs have they been watching? Keep in mind that there were flyers all over this thing for different events. Anything from car washes to who's graduating. I mean, you could put anything on this bulletin board you wanted to. So, we proceeded to post one flyer there. As we turned down the hall to go post another flyer on another bulletin board, a teacher from behind put his hands on my shoulder and a friend's shoulder and very calmly turned us around and walked us right down to the bulletin board to take the flyer down. Then he escorted us to the principal's office. He questioned us for about... You ready? He questioned us for about 1 hour and 30 minutes. A lot of things had to sink in. No, wait, the Hilltop Mall or the Hilltop Shopping Center? Or, well, now, what is this, the last Friday of the month or the first Friday? He was really confused. He must have been. Hour and 30 minutes of questioning. And as he was doing this, the teacher that brought us down there, who must have heard of you because he brought in a piece of paper and the principal then typed in http://www.2600.com in his browser. He browsed for about 15 minutes, went all through the hacked sites, including the East Timor ones, which I don't know if you've been following the news recently, but, you know, years after the Indonesian sites got hacked, it's finally starting to explode over there. Boy. Anyway, his eyes seemed to grow bigger and bigger with every site he saw. And in the end, we had our school internet access taken away for the rest of our high school careers. We also could not take any computer applied classes, including computer graphics, not to mention 2 weeks of detention for abusing school property. The principal, who you're more than welcome to refer to as Dillweed, then told us that any postings of any other flyers from then on would result in expulsion, as well as bringing 2600 and other hacker-related magazines to school. The question is, can they do this? Well, the answer is they did it. And the answer is that we get things like this so often it's not even funny. I mean, schools are very much like prisons in many ways. In fact, for a lot of people, it kind of prepares them for lives in prison just because of the attitude that they give you. The result for not being able to post flyers in the school, as a result of this, we had a local printing service mass print these flyers and hand them out to everybody across the street on all sides of the school. Needless to say, the next day the principal said this was, quote, not appropriate, unquote. Who cares? What I would get a kick out of would be seeing the Dillweed show up at one of the meetings. Next form of action, 20 picketers walked outside the school just a couple of inches beyond school property, carrying huge Free Kevin signs, as well as 2600 Bernie S. and fiber optic signs. Just another act of inappropriateness. Suggestions would be greatly appreciated. Well, those are good moves in themselves right there. I don't think I could have done better myself, but... You have to find where their reach ends and go right up to that reach, as you said, within 2 inches of school property, because what they are doing clearly is not fair. It's an impingement on your rights and something that I think is dangerous to do. It happens so often where people are just trying to express themselves in some way, do something that's slightly controversial, but certainly within the boundaries of what this nation stands for. All too often, though, they don't respond in any way as you did. They don't challenge it. So even though they're threatening you with all kinds of things, expulsion, castration, who knows? Who knows what they'll threaten you with? The thing is to keep challenging it, to keep spreading the word, and we're certainly here to help you do that. And don't say what school this is, but I imagine if you know where the Hilltop Mall in Kearney, Nebraska is, you can figure out what school it was that this happened in. And good luck with those meetings. Good luck getting through the next couple of years of school. Okay, here are some more letters. Then we'll take some phone calls, 212-279-3400. Dear Off the Hook, any chance that you or a third party has actual transcripts of the past radio broadcast? I just find it much easier to read ASCII text than to go through the Real Player 5.0 routine each time. Well, you know, let's make this clear here. We do a radio show here, all right? It's you know, a totally volunteer effort. We don't have a huge staff of people. So typing up the transcripts to every radio show, in addition to actually doing the radio show and then transcribing them onto real audio so they're available on the internet, that'd be a bit much. I mean, you're welcome to do this if you want to do this. Go right ahead. I don't think you realize how much work that involves. Sitting down, I mean, you know, people who sit in the courtroom typing down what everybody says. I could never figure out how they did that. But if there's any retired court transcribers out there that want to transcribe our show, hey, feel free. And we'll put it up on the web or whatever. Okay, here's something that someone else at a different school sent us. Apparently, a lot of schools block the 2600 internet site. And there's an organization known as FIRN, F-I-R-N. Has anybody heard of FIRN? Okay, well, apparently they do this for various schools. And somebody at the school wrote to them to ask why they were getting the message. And the message basically says, this site is being blocked by FIRN. For more information, please contact the FIRN help desk at 850-487-8851 in Tallahassee or 800-749-3476 outside Tallahassee. Now, when asked why 2600 was being blocked, the response was, a system administrator at FIRN has reviewed www.2600.com. This site includes all kinds of references to inappropriate material, just one of which is marylandsroom.com, which is a visual depiction of sexually explicit materials, which I suppose was one of the hacked sites that somebody linked to at some point. It's not exactly on our site, but there's a link to it there because something, I guess the CIA or something, got hacked, and the person who did that put that as a link. So we got blamed for it, once again. Anyway, I cannot supply you with a list of sites which are being blocked by the filter. This list is constantly being changed due to the nature of sites that are being created, which need to be filtered. Well, I'm sure we'll be on there for a good long time to come, and I'm sure people will figure out ways of getting around little things like that. So, we're being blocked, we're being slandered, we're being attacked all over the place. But you know who's breaking into computer systems? The U.S. Navy. That's right, the U.S. Navy has been caught attempting to break into secure areas of a worldwide website sponsored by a U.K. marine mammal preservation charity, according to officials at the organization. This comes from InfoWorld. The Whale and Dolphin Conservation Society, known as WDCS, which operates an online shopping site aimed at generating money for the welfare of the animals at www.wdcs-shop.com, said it was alerted to the attempted break-in last week by its site hosting company, Merchant Technology Limited. We were working late one night, and a command line request came in wanting to access unauthorized areas of the site, said Andy Fisher, marketing manager for Merchant. We were amazed to find out it was the Pentagon. Merchant built and manages the secure electronic commerce site for the Conservation Society and routinely keeps an eye on who visits. If users attempt to gain access to unauthorized areas, the company is alerted to the source of the incoming request. At 9:45 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time on April 28th, Fisher said workers at Merchant were shocked to see an incoming attempt to breach security by a user identified as donhqns1.hq.navy.mil. Merchant got in touch with WDCS immediately, only to find out that the charity had been contacted by the Navy a few weeks earlier. The Navy was interested in obtaining a report the group is working on that details the efforts of Russian animal experts to train dolphins in the Black Sea for military tasks, such as findings and attaching probes to submarines, Fisher said.
Yeah.
A WDCS representative said that there is nothing secret about the Russian government's activities in this area, but that the document does contain information about the export of the trained dolphins to foreign countries. The group declined to give the Navy a copy of the report only because it was not complete at the time. Once it is made final, the report will be published and the Navy can then examine it, the representative said. I guess they just got a little too anxious there. The WDCS said that it is confused about why the Navy would attempt to break into its website. I think whoever it was within the U.S. Navy facility would have better things to do rather than try and hack into our computers, said Chris Stroud, the organization's director of campaigns, in a statement. If they were seeking reports on the Black Sea, we shall be freely publishing these in the near future anyway. The halfway through the article started calling it the WCDS. It's actually the WDCS. I get confused with these things too sometimes. The WDCS previously has commented unfavorably on Navy activities such as its low-frequency sonar trials off Hawaii and on ship collisions with endangered whales. Merchant said it is 100% sure the hacking attempt originated from the Navy. WDCS has notified the U.S. Embassy in London and the relevant U.K. authorities, the organization said. We hope that the U.S. authorities have some rational explanation for this incident. According to a Navy official who declined to be named, the Navy has not yet received a formal complaint on the issue. Until the Navy receives a formal complaint with details, there's not much we can do to proceed further. Fascinating. Anyway, the website, www.wdcs.org, I'm sure we'll have more information on that. So, yeah, it's been a fun couple of weeks. All kinds of weird stuff's going on out there. Some of which we understand, some of which we just don't understand. But regardless, it's now time for us to go to the phones, 212-279-3400, and see who or what is out there. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello.
How you doing?
This is George in Pomona, New York. I have a question about telephones.
Okay, go ahead.
On the caller ID, I thought I heard something a few months ago about some system that picks up caller ID even when people are trying to block it, when the people that are sending it are trying to block it.
Yeah, well, it's possible that somebody could, and this is all switch dependent. Let's say that you make a phone call and you wish to block caller ID. What you do is you either have your phone set up so it permanently blocks caller ID whenever you make a phone call, or you preface it with *67, and that blocks the caller ID from reaching the person you're calling. Now, what happens when you do that, your number is sent out to your local switch with the *67 flag set, and again, your number is sent to the receiving switch the same way. When the receiving switch sees *67 flag set, it says, this person doesn't want their number sent to the subscriber, so therefore, I'm just going to send him the word blocked ID. Now, what happens is when that switch, that terminating switch, is owned by somebody who doesn't care or who doesn't know how to set it up properly, that number can just get sent along anyway. And that's what happened a while ago with OmniPoint, which is a PCS company, GSM company, that provides wireless communication. It doesn't work anymore. Apparently, they either figured it out themselves how to stop it, or you know, the bad publicity got to be too much for them.
So there's no system that you can get a hold of that would get those numbers even when people are trying to block them.
Well, there's ways of doing it that involve a fair degree of trickery. For instance, you could give somebody an 800 number to call, and that uses a technology known as ANI, not caller ID.
Uh-huh.
You can't block that.
Uh-huh.
You cannot block that. About the only way left to block that is to go through an operator, but as it's becoming increasingly difficult, operators are refusing to put through 800 numbers, and the technology, if it's not here already, is just around the corner to transfer ANI information, even if you do go through an operator. So there are ways of getting your number that a lot of people aren't aware of.
Okay.
All right?
Thanks.
Is there a specific thing you're trying to do?
Yeah, well, I've got somebody that's harassing me, and I'm trying to find out who they are.
Do you have caller ID?
Not yet.
Okay. A lot of people...
Well, when you do *69, that's the same as caller getting caller ID, right? It says it can't obtain the number.
If the number is blocked, then you'll get that recording.
Right.
So it probably caller ID wouldn't help you in that case. They have that star 5-7 nonsense, which is simply a way the phone company makes money off harassing calls.
Right.
What you should do is this a repeating incident?
Yes.
How often does it happen?
Oh, sometimes it goes on 3-4 times a day for a week, and then it'll stop for a while.
Okay, and does the person stay on?
Usually they listen and then eventually hang up.
Okay. What you need to do is log the exact time that those calls come in.
Right, I do.
And what state are you in?
New York.
Okay, you call the Bell Atlantic Annoyance Call Bureau. Their number should be in the front of your phone book.
Right.
And explain to them exactly what's going on. If they tell you to use star 5-7, just tell them it doesn't work, because
it doesn't work.
It does not work, except
right.
for them. It works very well for them, but it does not work for us.
I've got to get past the people that tell me to use that. I've got to get to somebody else.
Right. Say that you've already been through this, that you've talked to somebody else, that they said to call these people, and that you need to speak to whoever it is that can put a trap and trace on your line.
Right.
That's the only way. You probably won't find out who it is that's doing it, but they will find out that you're upset by this and that they have to stop, and if they don't, they'll get in a lot of trouble.
Right. Very good.
All right.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks.
That happens so often, more often than you would ever know. And while we're on the subject of GSM, PCS services, I just didn't want to forget this, because this was an opportunity to test out various services when I went over to Ohio, brought both the Sprint PCS phone and the OmniPoint GSM phone over there to see what would happen when we left the New York area. First of all, Sprint PCS has been going through some really, really bad times. I mean, I don't know what exactly the problem is, but I talked to somebody over there a couple of days ago, and they said ever since April, their message alert service has not been working. That is, if you're getting voicemail, your phone is supposed to beep and tell you you have mail. Well, it's been beeping even if you don't have mail. So people are constantly calling voicemail to see what the mail is, and there's no mail. And then they hang up, and it beeps again. And this keeps going on and on and on. And I guess it's great for Sprint, because everyone's using their phones now to call people they don't need to call. But it's a real pain, too. And so I called them, and they said, yeah, this is a problem in the entire Northeast United States. Everybody's having trouble with their voicemail. It's amazing, because it worked fine, you know, when I first got my phone a few months ago. And, you know, it also worked fine when I tried to make phone calls or get phone calls. Now it seems virtually nothing is working properly. So that was a bit of an annoyance right there. Now, as far as traveling across the country, Sprint PCS pretty much fades out once you get to Pennsylvania. And you don't pick it up again until you get to Pittsburgh. And that's a Sprint service you get in Pittsburgh. And that fades out pretty quickly, too. Nothing in Ohio until you get to Dayton. In Dayton, Ohio, there is some other company. I don't even know who they are, but the little Rome light starts flashing on the phone, and you can make phone calls through Sprint using some other companies, so you get to pay more money to them for the right to roam. GSM was slightly different. OmniPoint, again, faded out probably midway into Pennsylvania, and then as you approach western Pennsylvania and go into eastern Ohio, you get this company. It just shows up on the phone. Instead of saying OmniPoint, it just says 310-31. That's the entire name of the company right there. And I had no idea who they were. I do know that 310 is the United States country code for GSM, and 31 apparently is the number of the company. But other than that, it was very difficult to find out any more information. And they had good signal coverage, I'll say that. You were able to get them pretty much straight from western Pennsylvania all the way almost into Dayton. And it was fairly good service. I don't know what kind of prices those companies have, but we'll certainly learn when we get the bill. Okay, 212-279-3400. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Hello?
Yeah, speak up.
Hi. Were you kidding about the FCC requiring all radio stations to have commercials?
Let me ask you a question. What do you think?
I'm really afraid the answer is no, and that they are. But I really want you to say that you're just making that up.
I think we need to take a good look at this and see what kind of a world we're living in. Did you hear the fear in his voice? The fear in this caller's voice that something like this could happen, that the FCC could mandate that commercials are now mandatory, you know?
They've
think about it.
They've surprised me so many times. And each time they do, I can't believe it.
Uh-huh. But it becomes less of a surprise.
Well, yeah. And something like this, I mean, I'm ready for it, you know?
You're ready for this. You're ready for BAI being forced to play commercials by the FCC.
Well, I'm not ready for it, because if that happened, I would have a hard time listening to the radio.
Mm-hmm.
But
Maybe there's something you should do about it. You know, if something like that were to happen, or has already happened, or whatever, mm-hmm. maybe there's something you as a listener should be expected to do to you know, counteract that.
What would you suggest?
Well, you see, maybe the FCC has mandated that I can't suggest anything, and maybe that's up to the listener. Maybe the listener is the one that always has to have the final say.
Well, yes.
That's all hypothetical, all theoretical conversation here, right?
Right.
All rights reserved.
Right.
Okay. The thing is, we live in a society where crazy things happen, where all kinds of laws are being passed, where I was in Dayton, right? I was in the cool part of Dayton, which is known as... was the Oregon District, and we saw this building that apparently was a radio station building, mm-hmm. and it had the call letters of the radio station. And I saw the radio station call letters. I said, "Hey, look, it's a radio station building." And then as more of the building became visible, I saw a second set of call letters, and a third, and a fourth. 7 radio stations in one building in Dayton, Ohio. How many radio stations do you think they have in Dayton, Ohio to start with?
Right.
They're all owned by the same people.
Ugh.
San Diego, 11 out of 12 are owned by the same people. It's scary what's happening out there.
Yeah.
And that's why you have to take an interest. That's something I am mandating right now, that listeners take an interest in the kinds of things that are going on out there involving broadcasting, communication, things like that, because there are increasingly fewer voices, and those voices are being controlled by the same people. You have markets where radio stations are owned by the same people, TV stations, newspapers, cable companies, cable networks. You know, Right. Where is this leading?
And they're really coming down now on the micro-broadcasters.
Yeah, the micro-broadcasting. The people who put out 20-watt transmitters, they're a real threat to these 50,000-watt radio stations that own entire cities. You know, that makes you wonder where these people are really coming from.
Right, right.
Micro-broadcasting is an essential part, and it's a natural progression of the kind of squeezing of alternative voices that you're seeing out there.
Right, right. See, that's exactly why I can believe that they would pass legislation like that, because there's a lot of corporate influence, as you know, on the legislators,
mm-hmm.
and what would that do? That would put the squeeze on the non-commercial radio stations, which are, you know, we know what kind of stations are non-commercial at this point.
Right. Well, that's definitely true. I see certain parallels between what you're saying and what we were saying about hackers before, where a certain preconceived notion is drawn up as to how dangerous these people are,
right.
whether they're micro-broadcasters, people with alternative ideas, or hackers. And that's why when something outrageous happens, it's not that much of a surprise. It's a natural progression of things.
Right.
And that's why we have to start thinking about it before it actually happens, because usually when it happens, it's too late.
Right. And it starts with exactly what you were talking about before. It starts with developing a paranoia of, you know, those 2,600 people,
mm-hmm.
you know, as if it's like some organization where you're carrying around a card and, you know, having these meetings to plot to take down the internet in a half hour.
Right. I mean, if I didn't know these people, and if I wasn't a part of these people, I would be scared. I would
right.
say, boy, you know, you got to do something about these terrorist
right.
types.
And I'm surprised they're not painting the micro broadcasters as being real, you know, subversive.
Commies. Are. They are. They're saying all kinds of things about them too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not a pretty picture. So you have to you have to take everything you read with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
All right?
All right.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Hope we were able to settle your nerves a little bit.
Yes.
All right.
Bye-bye.
212-279-3400. Good evening. You're on the air.
They're saying all kinds of things about them, too.
All right. That's nice. But, you know, I don't want to hear myself. I don't want to hear myself distorted. I want to hear you. Good evening.
Emmanuel.
Yes, that's what I want to hear.
This is Roger.
Sorry?
This is Roger.
Roger. Do I know you, Roger?
No.
Okay, well, I'm happy to meet you, Roger.
Comment, if you will, on this rumor that I've heard going about something about bionic implants in bovines in the state of Nebraska. I've been reading the Weekly Sun, and I've heard something about
Wait. Just a minute here. First of all, you know the kinds of things that happen in Nebraska, and it's all kinds of nasty things going on out there. I try to stay away from the bovine community myself, only because it's, I don't know, I just don't think it's very healthy. The Weekly Sun?
True.
This is what you read?
Daily?
Uh-huh.
Well, weekly.
All right, well, listen, I suggest, listen to Pacifica News, okay? It happens every day on this station. And while we have a strong tie-in with the Weekly Sun, we tend to weed out some of the stories that, you know, maybe have a little bit of factual hostility. Yeah, that's the best way I can put it. Thanks for calling. Good evening. You're on the air. You were on the air. Okay, good evening. You're on the air. Speak up, please. You have 1 second.
Too late.
See, the thing is, when you hit the button, it takes a second for it to go away. If I had heard his voice, I would have stopped. All right. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Emmanuel. I guess you're on the cellular. Hello?
You guess I am on a cellular? I'm doing a radio show. How could I be on a cellular?
No. Well, I'm on the cellular. Okay, I hope it'll
do not ever confuse you and me again. Is that clear?
Okay.
All right.
I just wanted to mention some things before I talk about some other things.
Why don't you talk about some other things first, and then maybe you can mention those first
all right.
things.
You were mentioning the fact that you went on the radio across the country.
Did I mention that? Did that slip out? Yeah, I guess I did.
Yeah, but I wanted to ask you things about that. Before I do, I wanted to ask you one thing. I'm going to tell you one thing.
Can we just get to the meat of the matter without you prefacing it with what you're going to be doing?
All right. When I went to a COCOT, the COCOT used to charge
you went
for
to a COCOT, huh? That's a bit of a change in your lifestyle, isn't it?
It used to charge you a quarter to call an 800 number. It does not anymore, but guess what? When you call the 800 number, guess what?
You get an electrical shock.
Yeah. In 5 minutes, it asks you for a quarter. So it's like a sleazy thing. Like you get put on hold for something, like you call an 800 that like puts on hold. Like it's something that, you know, and then when you get the person, then you're talking to them, then it asks you for a quarter.
You know, they also charge you, they charge the terminating number 30 cents just to make the phone call, which is another insane thing.
Yeah, I don't
thing.
Understand that. But just like when you want to go to an ATM, I was up at upstate this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I was in a mall. I needed to get money to buy some clothes. I was looking
it's about all time.
Yeah, right. I was looking and I was like looking for some, you know, I wanted to get some cash.
Uh-huh.
And the ATM said, charge $150. I'm not paying $150. I mean, I know it's $150, but it's just the point of it. And the other thing is that I was walking all around the mall. All these ATMs charge $150. And then I asked someone, said, you know, in the mall information, do you know of ATM that doesn't charge you? And then they pointed me to one that did not charge me.
Well, now the way they're working things now with ATMs is really ridiculous. You have to go to your bank's ATM and hope that you don't have a bank that charges fees in the first place. But there is, I found this out this weekend, there is a growing movement in this country to sort of spit in the face of that. And one of the ways of doing that is to physically shut down the ATMs that do this. Now, this doesn't work on a lot of ATMs, almost none in New York City, as far as I know, because it involves one of the ATMs that actually suck in your card, not the swiping kind. Right. They get very, very confused when you hold the card and don't allow it to be sucked in. They get extremely confused, and they shut down. And there are people in the Midwest, and I saw this myself. I saw it myself from a distance. I didn't take part in it. I saw it from a distance that people were holding their cards halfway in, and the machine would just go dark and turn off.
In your own bank. I mean, not in your bank. I mean, if your bank is, like, somewhere in New York City, but you're traveling, like, upstate or out of the state or something like that, what if, and you know?
See, what I don't understand is if you go to a teller and you wait in line and you take up their time, and you talk about the weather, you talk about sports, you know, you flirt, or whatever it is you do, that doesn't cost anything. It takes up a lot of time, takes up, you know, human resources, but you don't get charged anything. You go to a computer, and you take microseconds, and you know, use some CPU time, and greatly save everybody time and money, and you get charged $1.50 or whatever it is they decide.
But they're paying for the phone call. That's probably why.
They're paying for the phone call? What phone call?
You know, the phone call from their bank to your bank. Like, to say,
it's a leased line.
No, if you're,
it's like saying you're paying for email, you know? It's just there all the time.
Yeah,
they're constantly communicating with each other.
You mean if you're at, all right, if your bank is North Fork Bank and you bank at Ohio Bank has your bank to say that, ask if you have money, and they have to sort of communicate.
They sort of communicate, but they're not making long distance phone calls with people sitting in a boiler room someplace, you know, saying, hey, you know, does this person have enough money? Should we give them the $20 or not? You know, it's all computerized. It takes half a second, you know?
Yeah, but I also want to talk about, you know that thing?
I'm sorry, but we're out of time. It's 8:57, and you're going to have to be the last word, and that disturbs me as much as it disturbs you, but that's the way it has to be. We'll be back again next week, updating everybody and all the things that we started to update people on this week. And till then, have yourselves a good week. This is WBAI New York, Emmanuel Goldstein for Off the Hook. See you next time.